The second one she won for was Tennessee Williams' Streetcar Named Desire. And they played on that in your book. You said they played on the fact that she had her own, she was dealing with her own mental illness.
Yes, bipolar disorder. Yes. And, you know, so she had obviously, she didn't originate the role as Jessica Tandy did on Broadway, but she played the role previously in London, directed by Laurence Olivier. And so, you know, but she wasn't familiar with the rest of the cast who had all come from the Broadway production. And Ilia Kazan purposely, you know, tried to create a sense of alienation, you know, for Vivian Leigh to maybe bring about a certain energy in her performance as Blanche DuBois. And, you know, kind of it seemed orchestrated this atmosphere where the Broadway cast kind of didn't really socialize so much with Vivian Leigh on set. And, you know, apparently they, as the film production progressed, they even kind of made the walls of the set tighter and tighter to kind of, affect this kind of claustrophobia, but it also kind of rattled, Vivian Leigh's, mental condition. It sounds to me that it was not a pleasant working experience for her working on that second, Best Actress Oscar winning film of hers.
I have to say, you did have a tidbit in there that I found fascinating. And this is just rumor, but allegedly she spotted Laurence Olivier offset smooching Marlon Brando.
Well, yes, that was, it is a rumor, but the rumor has that set, at her Hollywood home and like swimming pool. Yeah. So we don't know. I've come across that in a few different places, but yes, I don't know if we can say that's verified information.
Allegedly, it's a rumor. We don't know. But yeah, I found that an interesting tidbit because, boy, if that's going to make her feel very insecure on the set as well, youch.
Yes, but I think what really kind of added to that is, you know, after she wrapped Streetcar Named Desire, she kind of did this theatrical experiment on Broadway, appearing in two plays at the exact same time. In both plays she's playing Cleopatra, but one is the Shakespeare version and one is the George Bernard Shaw version. And one critic kind of lambasted her for one of the two performances. It really kind of like threw her off, and you know, her mental condition was very fragile at the time. And we know that, you know, she was married to Laurence Olivier for 20 years, but by I think their marriage ended in 1960. And I mean, he couldn't deal with the wild mood swings any longer. They became much more extreme. And so sadly that marriage had to end. You know, he didn't want that to be the case, but her mental condition just kind of exacerbated to a point that he couldn't take it any longer.
I don't believe she wanted it to happen either. I think she felt lost without him. And I believe that, I think they had a really great love story, and I really wanted to do them in my classic Hollywood iconic loves, because I really do think they had a special one. This is a funny story too, that you have in there. And I've read differing versions of Olivia de Havilland was nominated for Best Supporting Actress as Melanie, and as was Hattie McDaniel as a role as Mammy. And Hattie McDaniel won, and Olivia de Havilland kind of freaked out. Is that true?
Yeah, she did. But then she kind of had this epiphany later on that, I'm a lead actress, and so it's great that Hattie won, because I'm actually a lead actress, and my great parts will come by way of, you know, best actress Oscar wins, not best supporting actress Oscar wins. So that kind of occurred to her later on. But yeah, I think she was kind of floored by that.
Yeah, I heard she was in the kitchen crying or something.
Yeah, that's what the research I came across said. It sounds like she was very much planning to win that Best Supporting Actress Oscar. And, the role of Melanie Hamilton is so famous still today that you would think that would have been the case. But no, Mammy triumphed. And, of course, we know the story connected to Hattie McDaniel not being allowed to sit at the same table as the other, prominent figures. you know, having to deliver a studio prepared acceptance speech as, you know, after she made her long journey to the podium. Yeah. So
it makes me sick. That whole thing makes me sick. She couldn't even go to Atlanta to go to the premiere. And people would give her a hard time. And she said, well, what do you want me to be? I'm making good money. I'd rather play a maid than be a maid. And unfortunately, you know, that's what it was for her. But I'm glad she won. I thought she was wonderful. She did play that person. And I loved Hattie McDaniel. So onward, we're going into Joan Fontaine. I thought was really good in Rebecca. I thought she was perfect. And just like you said about Vivian Leigh and the cast kind of not hanging around her and she feeling isolated, the British cast did the same to Joan.
Joan Fontaine, in the set of Rebecca. Yeah, right. That's so true.
And she gave that performance where she felt you could feel her insecurity and her everything. And I thought that was an Academy winning performance, but she never, did she get nominated for that?
She was nominated for Rebecca. It was a tight year. That was the year that Ginger Rogers won for Kitty Foyle. Betty Davis was nominated for The Letter. Katharine Hepburn, The Philadelphia Story, Martha Scott, Our Town. So tight year.
Wow. Yeah.
But Joan Fontaine, of course, then did win the next year for Suspicion, which a lot of people thought, similar to Betty Davis in Dangerous, was kind of like a consolation prize.
I think so, because I don't think her character was, she did a good job. I like the film, but I hate how they copped out on the film. We don't have to tell because we're spoiling. Maybe somebody's never seen Suspicion.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, because some people say you're such a spoiler, and I'm like,
I know. I just
assume everybody has seen it. But
yes.
Yeah, but I get, you know, it's just like it just ruins the movie, the cop out. You know, and
right. Well, you have to blame the production code on that, of course, because they couldn't have Cary Grant represented in a certain way. So, yeah.
How ridiculous. But, yeah.
I know. I do like the movie up until that point, though.
Me too. You know,
I would have enjoyed the original ending that was intended.
Which would have been perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So wasn't Olivia also nominated that year? With Joan.
Yes. So it was the only year that two sisters have ever been nominated, you know, during the same year. Olivia was nominated for a film called Hold Back the Dawn. It was also a pretty, you know, big year in terms of the nominations. Betty Davis, The Little Foxes, which is really one of my favorite Betty Davis films. Greer Garson, Blossoms in the Dust, and Barbara Stanwyck, Ball of Fire. But Joan Fontaine pulled it out for Suspicion. She is the only actor, male or female, to ever win a movie for a Hitchcock performance.
That's amazing.
And Olivia was sitting, you know, Olivia hadn't won at that point. And, you know, as you said, you know, she was still, you know, she had just lost the year before. I'm sorry, 2 years before, for in the supporting actress category. So she had not won her Oscar yet, and she was sitting across the table from her younger sister, who, you know, had not been as established of a star as Olivia had been. So there was definitely some jealousy that was in play at that moment, but. According to research, Olivia loudly clapped her hands and shouted, "We've won! We have won!" And in her acceptance speech, Joan Fontaine, interestingly, did not acknowledge her sister at all,
so. Which I'm sure made her kind of crazy. Those crazy yes. kids. But Olivia, again, she sued the studios and she was successful. We know Olivia's no Melanie. She's one tough mama.
And she recently sued and lost Ryan Murphy for her portrayal in that
feud,
miniseries feud. Yeah.
And she wanted to take it to the Supreme Court. Olivia.
And she's going
to
be 104 in just a few days.
Oh, I mean, she is something else. I mean, and I'm like, you have the gorgeous Catherine Zeta-Jones playing you. You know, I don't see what was so horrible about her performance that would be hurtful to Olivia.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know somebody was writing a book years ago. I couldn't wait to read it, but it has never come out. And I'm sure it won't until... And if ever, Olivia passes.
You mean
passes.
Like her autobiography?
No, it's a book somebody wrote about her and Joan, and it was called Feud, I believe.
Oh.
And it was supposed to come out a couple years ago, and it never did. So I'm sure Olivia kept that from coming out.
Yeah, no, it captured the public's attention for, you know, almost an entire century. And
they played into it, the two of them.
I think so. I mean, some people felt like it was a publicity driven feud. It was more of a hoax, but there were some pretty harsh things that Olivia had to say, I felt, about Joan when Joan Fontaine passed away in 2013, referring to her as Dragon Lady.
Time does not heal all wounds, right?
right.
Not even 80 years of them. No. Oh, mm-hmm. Lord. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but Olivia eventually got hurt. She won too.
In the race for Oscar win, she eventually won, of course, for To Each His Own and The Heiress. But, you know, I mean, if I'm going to have to choose one in terms of, you know, who's my favorite, I seem more drawn to the Joan Fontaine movies for some reason.
Me too.
Yeah.
I feel
yeah.
the same way, because I know, I don't know. I see her acting, Olivia, for sometimes I just know she's acting. And it's not that I don't dislike her. I like The Heiress. The thing I don't like about it is how her tone went from, hello, Dad, to this truck driver overnight. You know, that was really, to me, that was just, okay, couldn't you find like a happy middle maniacal kind of thing instead of this real from this?
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, Letter to an Unknown Woman with Joan Fontaine is such an incredible movie.
Oh,
I,
my God. How sad is that? Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about her that appeals to me more. But
me too, I have to say. But I think mm-hmm. I don't think that we're in the majority. I think most people are like Team Olivia, and it's not like Team Joan. I just prefer her movies. I tend mm-hmm. to watch more of her films than Olivia's.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Me too.
Oh, but when she did win one time, I guess Joan said something about Olivia's husband, Reese's new husband, being married 5 or 6 times already. And
right.
Joan was waiting backstage and Olivia won the award and she totally shunned Joan, went apart from her and said she ruined, I think in your book you said she thought it made her night terrible.
Right. So this is the year that Olivia de Havilland won her first Oscar for To Each His Own. And she had picked up a piece in, as you said, in one of the trade weeklies about Joan Fontaine mentioning that Olivia de Havilland's husband at that time had had many wives before he married Olivia de Havilland. And that left like some sort of stigma. Mm-hmm. Olivia de Havilland was quite sensitive to that. And so she was expecting an apology from her sister, didn't receive it. And then, after she won the Oscar, she saw Joan Fontaine in the back somewhere and refused to acknowledge her younger sister. And the photographers took advantage of that. And you can go online and see that photo.
It's amazing photo. And it's just, they're a year and 3 months apart. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I know, I'm not even 2 years difference from my older sister. I'm the baby and we span 18 years. So
that's why you like Joan Fontaine then. Okay.
Probably. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my God.
I'm the younger sibling too. So yeah.
And I'm a lover, not a fighter, but if you fight me, I'll fight you back, honey. And it's because your sisters. If it was just a friend, you don't get compared the same way as you do as a sister. Like my sister was the goody two shoesy. She followed the rules, but she was also mean. I was kind of like babies are. I think they kind of marched. My mom said, you always march to your own drummer. You do whatever. And, there was that thing until, as she got married, whatever. And then we became really good friends. But until then, it was war. And I literally lived at my friend's house, so I didn't have to be there. And being that close in age, I understand, oh, Joan's prettier than Olivia. You hear all this nonsense constantly. And Joan said she hated her from birth.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, they grew up in Tokyo, Japan. The rivalry started there. And then when it transferred to Hollywood, you know, we know that Olivia was the first to become an established star at Warner Brothers. And she barred her younger sister from, you know, the studio. She barred her younger sister from being publicized in the press as Olivia de Havilland's sister. And Joan Fontaine had to come up with her own last name, you know. And so she finally took on her mother's maiden name, Fontaine. So, yeah, I mean, right from the beginning, Olivia de Havilland was very sensitive to the fact that there was this younger sibling who maybe some people thought was more attractive. And so she didn't want to have that be readily known at first.
Yeah, because it's not as hard as like saying, oh, you're prettier than Bette Davis or Betty Day. You can deal with that. But when it's a sibling and you're in the mm-hmm. same business and people are comparing you, it's like this thing that must eat at them because it's just totally different. And I don't think it's fair, but it's what it is. And and I think the people put it on themselves as well. But enough about those two dames. Let's go the 40s. I'm thinking of all these women who came here. I have all of this. Ginger Rogers, you touched on briefly. I find her fascinating because of her mommy. Mommy Dearest, well, Leela, who really pushed Ginger along, and she was the epitome of stage mother. I liked Ginger very much in Kitty Foyle. People didn't take her seriously. I thought Ginger was very talented. She could sing, she could dance, she could do comedy, she could do drama. She's one of my favorites. And I think she's underrated by a lot of people. And I thought she did a great job in Kitty Foyle. And I also loved her in Primrose Path.
Yes, which came out the same year in which she plays... She's in a family of prostitutes, correct? Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't... I mean, it's pretty blatant. But, you know, they're like, oh, they keep company with men and whatever. Matt and the mother and the drunken father and, you know, the old grandma who started her daughter on the path of being a prostitute. And then poor Ginger. And Jill McRae was in that as well. So if that was a very good movie. I liked it a lot. And I absolutely love. She was nominated. The woman who played her mother. What is her name?
For In Primrose Path?
Yes. She played the mother, Marjorie Rambeau. I thought she was a very good actress. She played in a lot of different roles, and I thought she was great. And she was great as a mom, and sad. But Leela, what I love about this is that they made The Hard Way, which is a really great movie.
With Ida Lupino,
right, and Joan Leslie. And they made it a sister thing. Ida is the big sister who wants the ambition to make her sister a star, using people. You know, poor Jack Carson. I think that's one of the best roles he's ever done. And it's based on them. And I heard that they even offered Ginger the role of,
to essentially play herself. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But she didn't know.
Yeah, that came out just a few years after Kitty Foyle. And Dennis Morgan is in there too, right? And he was also in Kitty Foyle.
He played the love interest and to the other, to Joan Leslie after, you know, poor Albert. But this is a good movie, and Ida is fabulous in this. And I think it's funny that she was offered the part. And I don't think they put two and two together, because she loved her mother, and I don't think that...
Oh, her mother was everything to her.
Her best friend.
They lived together. They, you know, her mother pretty much escorted her to the stage when she won. And, you know, the bulk of her acceptance speech is honoring her mother. You know, her mother appeared actually as in a tiny role in a film that Ginger made just a few years later with Ray Milland, The Major and the Minor.
I couldn't believe how much you look like Ginger.
Yes. But, you know, there's some problems, of course, that come with her mother, too, because she was very happy to testify at the House on American Activities Committee
and, I know.
You know, and put some names into play that helped to, destroy some careers. So a lot of people have, a lot of negative feelings about her mother. And Ginger had to kind of defend her mother, it seems, quite a bit throughout her career. So, it's a fascinating
dynamic, those two.
Dynamic.
That was like her love story. Did you ever see this picture? This one fascinates me, and I post it on my Facebook page maybe, every 6 months or something. Ginger is marrying Lou Ayres, and they're at the wedding cake, and there's only a bride on top of the cake.
Oh, I didn't notice that detail.
I will send that to
Janet Gaynor. I believe that Janet Gaynor is in that photo too. Because I think she was the maid of honor, or she, I mean, they were so close, Janet Gaynor and Ginger Rogers.
I didn't know that.
But I didn't know. There's only a bride on top of the cake. Wow.
Yes, this huge bride. And I said, no wonder they were doomed. And he also mentioned Leela being part of the reason. I'm sure a big part of the reason that they didn't stay together.
Yes, it's, I mean, Ginger Rogers did have a few husbands.
Five, and I no believe. Children,
But no children, and it, from what I've gathered, the relationships were always compromised by the fact that she had this strong mother figure in her life.
That's our Ginger.
And if you want to know more, watch the Ida Lupino movie.
Right, and then we're going to go. I want to go to fascinating Song of Bernadette. Jennifer Jones.
I love the Song of Bernadette.
Yes, and Jennifer Jones, luminous, lovely Bernadette Soubirous. And the backstory is fascinating as well, because people, she was great in that part. She really was.
Yeah.
And I love the picture of her sitting next to Ingrid Bergman after she won the award, and Ingrid said, no, you were better.
Your
than
Bernadette
my,
was better than my Maria. For whom the bell tolls. Yeah.
Oh my God! And how beautiful was Jesus Ingrid Bergman in that picture? Luminous, hardly any makeup. What a gorgeous
chick. I know, no makeup
chick.
At all. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a wonderful film. And was that the first? Because her name was Phyllis, but she was
Phyllis
married
Isley.
Married to Robert Walker. They met in New York.
Yes.
They had two boys. But did the public know that at that point?
No. So David O. Selznick was wanted to keep that out of the public eye, and kind of wanted to kind of use the same blueprint he had used for Vivien Leigh with Gone with the Wind, in terms of creating this image of Jennifer Jones in which she was kind of seen as, very virginal and very pure. And if the public had become aware of the fact that Jennifer Jones was in fact married and had two sons, that would have destroyed this image that he wanted to create, that to connect her to her character in the Song of Bernadette. So he went to great lengths to hide that. And of course we know that, Luella Parsons, the famous gossip columnist, came across that information and that really, really, became a problem. And so the day after Jennifer Jones won the Oscar, which, by the way, was her 25th birthday, she filed for divorce from Robert Walker, which was very awkward because they were just kind of getting into the production of the super Selznick production of Since You Went Away.
I love that movie.
Each other.
Yeah.
And I've read that was an incredibly challenging experience.
I can't even imagine.
Both of them, because they're playing their characters are, in a romantic situation with each other, but in real life, these two people are in the midst of, separating their lives via divorce. So.
And her hooking up with this powerful producer who basically took over her career.
Absolutely, he did. Yeah, they wouldn't marry officially for a few more years, but she was under him completely.
Yeah, and he directed her career in a lot of ways. They think he... Correct. Like she did the one with Rock Hudson, and she was like
a
10 years
arms.
Or 15 years too old for it. And another, Tenders the Night, is that it, with Jason Robards?
Yes,
another
and
she
Fontaine,
was way too old for. And
yes,
So I guess he was a depressive kind of guy anyway. He got depressed and he just quit. That's it.
Yeah.
And poor Jennifer, she had her problems. And her son, one of her son, I think that was one son with Robert Walker, tried to commit suicide, correct?
Correct. And then later on,
her
daughter committed suicide.
One with Selznick.
The one with Selznick. Yeah. 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 I mean, there's another issue of mental imbalance there. I mean, Jennifer Jones herself, you know, attempted suicide. And later in life, when she was married to Norton Simon, the famous industrialist who, you know, has this beautiful museum in Pasadena, you know, she would, you know, kind of use her celebrity to shine a spotlight on mental illness and raise money around that
I thought that,
that issue.
Was wonderful. Yeah, I saw that she did that in her later years. Let's face it, that was taboo.
It was taboo then. Yeah, exactly.
Like you were some sort of like a freak or something, which this is just a normal kind of... You know, it's like your batteries aren't charged, right? There are wiring in our system that goes haywire, and it needs to be fixed. And people just didn't get it in those days. And those horrible electric shock treatments.
Oh, I know. It's horrible. Oh. I mean, this is a time we're going to see a therapist to just talk about, you know, how you're doing was seen as very taboo and very, very controversial. And now it's like it's no big deal at all. But it's unfortunate the times that these women lived in that regard, because there was such stigma around, you know, having a kind of a mental imbalance.
So. Yeah. And nobody understood really. And nobody was talking publicly about it. Cause like now, no matter what you are, whatever you do, people have a comeback story. And then people were, you know, so a little, because they were unaware, let's say they were uneducated to that. And if it was in your family, it was taboo. And if even cancer was taboo, you know, you just didn't talk about anything like that. And I admire that about Jennifer, that she did support that and come on and talk about that, because that wasn't an easy thing to do.
Now, and she also took on a giant role, you know, when she married Norton Simon in bringing a lot of like, you know, Asian artwork to his museum, and because she loved traveling to places like India and you know, Southeast Asia, and so, you know, that became a big thing that she spearheaded too, and I love that. I'm a member of the Norton Simon Museum, and you do see her name, you know, in the museum on different. Oh, it's beautiful!
I want to do a whole Hollywood thing.
Yes. The whole downstairs is devoted to kind of Asian art, and that's really, you know, a lot of that has to do with Jennifer Jones.
Yes. She was one of my mom's, you know, because my mother was very religious. So she loved The Song of Bernadette. And then she would watch The Sound of Music. Maria. Oh. All holy ladies. Oh, mother. Anyway. But she loved Barbara Stanwyck and Babyface. So,
I love Babyface.
Oh my God. We talked about that, Sloan and I, in that podcast of things to watch. So let's go to Joni Baby, Joan Crawford, the end of her career. She was kicked to the curb by her studio. You know, they had cleaned out her closets and everything, and they thought she was washed up.
Yeah.
And so she
submits to a screen test, you know, which was shameful for her. Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, a screen test for a part in which she plays a mother, which she had never played a mother before. And not only that, but a mother to grown children. So, you know, that was seen as extremely humiliating. But it won her the Oscar for such an incredible performance that people so love, Mildred Pierce. You know, obviously based on the James M. Cain novel, given a film noir veneer that the book really didn't capture, as you can see in the Kate Winslet, you know, miniseries many, many decades later.
I didn't like that at all. I'm just a Mildred girl. I watched it, but I wasn't a huge fan of it.
Yeah. But a really important movie because it shows a woman advancing in society. It's kind of seen as a metaphor for the women who were partaking in, you know, the American economy during World War II as the men were off fighting. And then, you know,
Bert was off with Mrs. Viederhoff.
Yes, yes. But then, of course, she's, you know, she's punished. You know, her both of her daughters, you know, her younger daughter dies. Her elder daughter, Vivita, you know, turns on her and has an affair with her husband. And, you know, she's kind of that's kind of seen as a punishment for a woman trying to advance in society. So
marrying that wormy Monty Berrigan and mm-hmm. babying Vita all the way. Cause she was to me, you know, I wanted to do a Mother's Day show, but I couldn't pull it together about bad moments. Mm. And I thought Mildred was a very bad mother because she just gave and gave and gave to Vita. She enabled Vita. Vita was a monster. Mm-hmm. She came out mm-hmm. as a monster, I believe. But, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, Anne Blythe was fabulous in that role. But for Joan, this really meant a lot to her for her comeback. And, you know, at the end, of course, she goes back. We assume she goes back with Bert and she has no more money. She builds these incredible restaurants all on her own. First, she is a waitress and Vita, my mother, a waitress, the whole thing. And she gets all this money. And then, of course, she gets punished. Monty Berrigan, Vita wants that kind of lifestyle. She marries somebody she knows she doesn't love. He wants a third of her business. And boom, it all, you know, blows up on her.
Yeah.
And Vita does get punished in the end, which I'm delighted for. And, but Mildred, she does too. If you think about it, I think it's supposed to be a happy ending, you know, that kind of leaving and the day is clear and she walks out. I guess, right? That is a happy ending. Like she's finally done and Vita's amps grade, no more Monty Berrigan. That whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know if I took it as a happy ending. It almost was kind of a return to, you know, her former ways. She's relegated sadder but wiser, but, you know, kind of having to return to, you know, the role of housewife. That's how I interpreted it.
Well, me too. I didn't think it was a happy ending, but I think it was supposed to be. I think people were supposed to look at it. Mm-hmm. As a happy ending, because she had gone through the mill with the daughter and with Monty and with all this stuff.
I look at it as a cautionary tale, though, like for women, like if you are planning to be this ambitious, you know, you might get in trouble for pursuing that ambition, which is to me as a feminist is a very, very sad statement.
It was pretty prevalent in those days. You know, your place, honey, you know, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And this mm-hmm. was after the war. People had come back from the war and women, they didn't want women really, you know, go back home, you know, the '50s, go back home. That's mm-hmm. it. You don't belong out there. This is a men's world. So it was sort of like that at that point. And but she had a huge, possessed, I thought she was really great in that.
I mean, let's just point out that, you know, she had never been even nominated for an Oscar before Mildred Pierce. You know, she had this gigantic career at MGM, before she joined forces with Warner Brothers for Mildred Pierce. She had not been nominated before. And then after Mildred Pierce, the next year, she's nominated for, Possessed. And then a little bit later for Sudden Fear, which she helped to produce.
Right, which was a great noir. Oh,
I'm sorry. It was two years after Mildred Pierce, she was nominated for Possessed. But yeah, that she gets her Academy attention post, with Mildred Pierce and after that, but not before.
I love how it was where she was afraid she was not going to win, but just in case. So she said she was sick. But she's all dolled up, you know, she's in propped up in her bed in her hair. She's got a ribbon in her hair and some makeup. And I believe Anne Blythe is there. And then all of a sudden she wins and on the cameras, there she is. And Joan, the star, which is so Joan.
Well, yes, but it also showcases her ability to manipulate the media in such a way that favors hers, you know, because her goal really was so that her photo and her photo alone would be on the front pages of the newspapers the next morning. And that's what she got, you know.
Gotcha.
She had her director, Michael Curtis, actually come to her mansion in Brentwood with her Oscar. I mean, you know, as if she were a queen. I mean, it was she wanted to orchestrate that in a way. And it is, you know, she said that she was sick, but she certainly doesn't appear that way when the photographers appear in her
house.
She
looks fabulous.
Yeah. So, and she did it the same. She did it again, we know, 17 years later when she, you know, picked up the Oscar for Anne Bancroft, the year Anne Bancroft won
that
for
was a riot.
The Miracle Worker. Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah, that didn't make Betty too happy. And Joan looked dazzling. And I read this article in Vanity Fair about a guy who became friends with Betty, and she took them all back to her home, and she was raving about Joan. And she really wanted that third Academy Award. And,
oh, yeah.
And Olivia was there as well. And he said, you have to admit, Joan did look amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That did not sit right with Betty. And Betty and he did not really get along after that. But he said she put a knife. She was cutting bread, and she, like, put a knife in his face. And, like, what? So, but then I think a very interesting race was All About Eve, Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And Judy Holliday.
Judy Holliday. Yesterday. So what Betty was furious because she wanted Anne Baxter to be in the Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
But Anne said, it's all about Eve, so I'm not going to be supporting actress. So those two were competing against each other. I thought Gloria Swanson was wonderful. And I mean, really, nobody wanted that part. So many people were offered that part, and they were afraid to take it. And Gloria was nothing like that character. She was out there and vibrant and, you know, Miss Health Food, and she wrote books, and she did all this stuff. I thought she did a wonderful job there. And Judy Holliday, she came in, and there had to be five, right? I can't think of who else was nominated.
Eleanor Parker for Caged.
Yes.
And as you said, Anne Baxter for All About Eve as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Caged was great, too. She did a good job
on
that. And I think, I have to say, I really dislike Born Yesterday. I hate that movie.
Really? Do you?
Yes, I do not like it. It's just annoying how all of a sudden she knows everything and she starts talking in front of things and her genius and all this stuff. It just annoys me. I know I think I probably would have liked it better on Broadway, but in a movie.
To me, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
The thing about Born Yesterday that I think is so powerful is it's about a, you know, Judy Holliday is playing the archetype of the dumb blonde. And
which
in
she
real
did a
life,
great job, yeah.
And in real life, she had an extremely high IQ, which we can talk about as well. But, you know, it's about a, quote-unquote, dumb woman who, by way of gaining an education, becomes liberated. And that was seen at the time as very, very, that put a lot of, like, you know, some conservative minds were not very happy with that type of story being told. Similar to it, 3 years before when Loretta Young won for The Farmer's Daughter, in which she plays a Swedish immigrant living in the United States who eventually, you know, gains a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. These movies about women gaining, you know, by way of an education, by way of political power, they become very uncomfortable films and ruffle conservative feathers during that time.
That's so
weird.
You
know,
makes sense. And I, but you wonder why they won. Who voted that?
Well,
then?
That's a very special year that what we're talking about, because we have all these cancellations that we can kind of, you know, discuss as maybe being put into play, which ultimately gained Judy Holliday the Oscar. Judy Holliday, by the way, was at a private party that night with Gloria Swanson and Jose Ferrer, who won for Cyrano de Bergerac. And she felt illness when her name was announced because she did not think she would win. And sitting next to her is, you know, one of the two women she thought should win. And it was that was a surprise.
Yeah,
but
in your book, you said she felt like guilty.
She felt guilty and she felt ill. Yeah, she you know, I think it was not a happy night for her in some ways because she didn't, it was a surprise victory. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I give the film credit because I am so I'm so concerned of the world we still live in where women are denied an education. And you know, there are politicians who are actively trying to make that happen because they know that, you know, what do you gain if you get an education? You gain liberation. You gain a sense of different opportunities that exist in the world.
And also trying to bring different laws, you know, archaic mm-hmm. laws back and things like that.
Right.
We should be coming a long way, baby, not going back. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And she's physically assaulted by the Broderick Crawford character, you know, for attempting to gain an education. And I just think, yeah.
I have to revisit that, you know, because I think I haven't seen that since I was in my early 20s. And I bet I have mm-hmm. a change of idea. I bet I would like it more. I have to revisit it.
Well, this is so interesting that, you know, she was also dealing with the McCarthy era witch hunts.
Yes.
Because her name appeared in the Red Channel's publication, which listed entertainment industry officials who were thought to have communist ties. And she had to go to the House of American Activities and testify. And guess what she did when she got there? She channeled her character from Born Yesterday and kind of played dumb.
I love that.
And kind of flummoxed the committee and was able to kind of bypass certain penalties that would have been given to performers otherwise. So I admire Judy Holliday a lot.
Oh, I do too. I admire her very much.
Yeah.
And, you know, she died, sadly, way too young.
She was so young when she died. Yeah, yeah. I think she was 43 when she died.
Yeah, breast cancer, right? And she mm-hmm. left a son. Mm-hmm. I'm going to revisit that because I did like her. I loved her in Adam's Rib. I loved her in the one with Jack Lemmon where she gets the a big billboard.
On Columbus Circle? Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it should happen.
It should happen to you.
Yeah.
And I like her. And like I said, I'm going to revisit it because I was in my 20s. So I definitely.
Yeah. I have a certain soft spot for her because I just feel like her story is so fascinating. And she was an inventor too. She invented like some sort of rack that connects with the phonograph. And she wanted to get away from Hollywood after this whole witch hunt thing. And she stayed in New York City with her, you know, tried and trusted friends, including the author Patricia Highsmith. And I don't know. I think her story it's not as well known, and it kind of gets overshadowed by the fact that she was the victor during this kind of Olympia-like year. Davis and Swanson. So
I think you're correct, and I will revisit. But I do like her. I was only like really 23 years old when I saw it. So I do.
Yeah.
It's not.
I mean, the film is not as fantastic, of course, as All About Eve, which I just saw recently. I just love that film.
I watched it two nights ago.
Oh, did you? Yeah. It's one of those films that I feel like I should watch every once a year. It's
yes.
such a treat. Yeah.
It is.
And it just
such
gets
a wonderful
better.
Film. It does. It does. And I love the Addison. Addison's when he comes in at when he's listening in at Eve, you know, trying to make a play for Bill and all that. It's just such a great film.
Amazing.
Great film.
Yeah.